TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Saddled Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I love that dress uniform you've got on today. That is the fanciest dress uniform I've ever seen, and I like the colorful patches.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Chris. I worked really hard on this very strange ceramic badge that I'm wearing. I made it in art class, and I think the collage turned out really well.
You know, I actually really loved that element of this episode because it felt like if you go back to the original series and the menagerie or court martial or those types of episodes where they had those formal dress uniforms, and it felt updated a bit. But I'm laughing now at the idea that all these people, all these leaders were in art class before the trial, creating their uniforms for the trial, and then they get to show it off.
Yeah, we're just lucky that the trial didn't take longer and wasn't postponed longer, you know, as they created more and more, you know, elaborate brooches to wear on their uniforms.
If it takes 6 more months for them to have the court martial, they all walk in, they're like from shoulder down to their ankles, they're just covered in colorful mosaic artwork.
Yeah, oh. I mean they it could happen.
That would be amazing. All right, everyone, we're going to continue walking through season 2 of Strange New Worlds today. This is the second episode of the season, Ad Astra per Aspera. And here's a very quick rundown of the episode. 6 months after Pike becomes aware that his first officer, number one, Una Chen Riley, is a genetically modified Illyrian, a court martial takes place. Pike finds counsel to defend her, an old friend of Una's, it turns out, and a Star Trek courtroom drama takes place. Members of the crew of the Enterprise defend Una, while Starfleet sticks to its laws and does not want to budge in the face of some difficult questions about itself. In the end, spoiler alert, Una is found not guilty of all charges and is back aboard the Enterprise. Just as I said last week, I expected to happen in this week's episode. So, Matthew, yeah, this is a very straightforward story, and it all unfolds in the courtroom pretty much, at least once we get to a location where we can all breathe without fancy oxygen masks on like Pike.
This is true. This is true. Chris, one of the most interesting things about this episode is it, unfortunately, piggybacked off a conversation we had last week, you know, about this idea of canon and how all these things work together, because this created what I was thinking as an Illyrian conundrum. And the reason I say this is because I wanted to ask you with how you think this storyline fits with everything that we know. My wife and I are making our way through Enterprise. We're in season 4 and we just hit the augment arc. And, you know, we learn there that Denobulans have been doing genetic engineering on themselves, carefully using genetic engineering for 200 years. And of course, Starfleet works within. Dr. Phlox is actually the doctor on the NX-01. And so it seems that they are willing to accept alien species that do genetic engineering on their own merits and don't discount them for service in Starfleet, which I think is interesting. So now we've got the Illyrians here. And I was just struck by, it seems as though this is a very strange story to be telling, because I know that we don't know officially that the Denobulans ever became part of the Federation. That isn't anywhere in canon. But it just still seems odd to me that they would accept Denobulans much closer to the aftermath of the eugenics wars than here in the 23rd century, where, you know, the Illyrians, this is part of their culture. This is what they do. You know, Starfleet's supposed to be all about, and so is the Federation, infinite diversity and infinite combinations. This whole idea of not judging other cultures based off of our experience. And so I it really feels like to me this is something that seems hard to kind of jive with where we've been. And, of course, where we're going to go, too, because, I mean, we know this is a question that's never going to be fully dealt with, really, in all honesty, until we get some of the thought process behind things with, you know, Julian and seeing the repercussions of, you know, genetic engineering there. And so, I don't know, how did you feel about this episode and the way in which we're dealing with this question with Una, which, again, this is something that was hinted at in the books that Una and the Illyrians kind of do genetic engineering, but there wasn't a ton about it, really. So this is something they're making up for this show.
Right. Well, it's... I think that watching the episode, it wasn't something that I thought about. So I think that speaks to the strength of this individual story, the way it was written, the way it was portrayed by the actors, that just watching this, I was caught up in what was happening with Una. I was caught up in the kind of ethical dilemma that Starfleet is finding itself in, that the Federation is finding itself in here. Now, if you step back from that and you look at the things that you're talking about, it does raise a lot of questions. Like you said, we don't know if Denobula ever joins the Federation. It is seen on the star charts that at least around 2378, Denobula appeared to be a member of the Federation, but that's not part of a story. It's not part of an episode that we saw on screen. So we don't know from stories what really happened there. But regardless of whether Denobula is ever admitted into the Federation, we do know that Phlox is the doctor aboard the Enterprise. But is Phlox officially a Starfleet officer? I think is one question I would have, because that was a medical exchange program between the Denobulans and Starfleet that had him aboard the NX-01. We never see him wear a Starfleet uniform. And so, if he's not actually a Starfleet officer, it would allow them to skirt the rules about allowing someone who is from a genetically modified species to serve in Starfleet. But also, Phlox himself, I believe, was not genetically modified. At least that was also not part of a story, was it? Or am I forgetting something?
I don't think that there's necessarily any place that it says that he is.
Right.
But I don't think there is any place where it says that he isn't.
Right.
The way he says it in the episode Borderland is that, you know, they have been using careful genetic engineering for 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thought process is that all the Denobulans, then my guess is, mm-hmm. would be a product of some kind of genetic engineering.
Right.
And so... and I think you're right. You know, Phlox is never a part of Starfleet. He's not an officer. But I think that's actually something that really gets to Nera's, you know, questioning of all Starfleet in general. Mm-hmm. It's like you're willing to bend the rules, mm-hmm. or break them when it suits you. And then when it doesn't suit you, or you feel like and so you're making the rules arbitrary. And
Right. So,
again, I think on first watch, we kind of end up with the emotional reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I end up with Paslik, where I'm on the other side, where I start to actually think about the episode and I lose the emotion and I realize there are a lot of, I think, issues with this episode in how it fits with the larger story. It seems to, and this is the thing, you know, you're creating those issues with what you're writing because you're making this up for this time period.
Yeah.
And therefore, I to me, in all honesty, I feel like this episode and this whole issue, going through this whole issue, honestly needed to be rethought pretty substantially, because I think emotionally the episode is great, but I think story-wise, the episode has a ton of flaws, especially when I think about the way it fits in with the rest of where it's supposed to be with Star Trek canon. And it's definitely one of the things we talked about last week. They made it pretty clear that they're basically, you know, body checking canon whenever they want. And this is definitely, I think, an issue in this episode, so that if I don't think about it, it's not a problem. But if I start to think about it, it becomes an issue.
Yeah. I think this is a case, though, where when you're writing something like this, I wouldn't define this as body checking canon, because I think body checking canon is something like there's a war with the Gorn coming when we didn't know anything about the Gorn. Kirk's crew, you know, the Gorn were mysterious at that time. In this case, you're dealing with things that they do contradict other things that we know from the Star Trek universe, but mostly in subtle ways that people aren't thinking about too much when they're watching or writing, I feel. And I think in the case of writing this about Una, because the primary focus is on what happened to this particular character whose background we don't know much about, even though some of the details that they use to tell the story and build the story about her contradict something like, well, why was Starfleet working with Denobulans, who are known to use genetic engineering? It's easier to kind of play around with that, not follow it too strictly to tell a character story. So I see it more in that light. And I also think, just going back to the Denobulan thing again, I think another thing, that the fact that it doesn't mesh with what we feel that we know about canon, or what we assume was the position of the Federation towards another world, does support the message of the story and how the world works in real life, which is we have rules, but we apply them differently depending on the situation. And so with Denobula not being part of the Federation, it would be easy for the Federation to turn a blind eye to the fact that they have a long-running practice of genetic manipulation, which the Federation has banned. But because they're not a member world, well, you know, we get other benefits from our relationship with them, so we'll just not worry about that. And that's exactly how relationships between nation states work in the real world today. So I think that, for me, works in terms of the story and how these geopolitical units would interact, and how the Federation would have to make hard decisions to actually build an organization that involved so many worlds and so many traditions and customs and cultures and so forth. Just like Una talks about in this episode, that's what drew her to Starfleet in the first place, is how diverse it was. And it also raises the interesting question that if what we see on the star charts is correct and Denobula does eventually join the Federation, are they asked to stop all of their genetic engineering practices at that point? And that is an interesting question that could be explored at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of those are completely valid points. And I think that it does just go to show, again, the way in which we're willing to turn a blind eye to things as long as they benefit us, right? And it does show the hypocrisy there of the Federation. It just seems odd to me. And also, too, I think the thing that was the most odd about this whole conundrum to me as well, not really just the canon stuff, but it's like, why are you punishing a child for something that they had no say in, right? Yeah, because that, you know, Illyrians have these things done to them when they're children, babies, you know, they have absolutely no say. Mm-hmm. And so it makes no sense to do that. And so, yeah, it was one of those things where it definitely, you know, it puts the Federation, I think, in a really terrible light here.
Yeah. The Federation comes off very poorly in this episode.
Yes. Which, you know, again, we've seen Deep Space Nine do that type of storytelling, where we question the choices that the Federation is making and whether or not they're right. Enterprise did that too, you know, when we talk about, you know, the choices that Archer had to make and all that, especially during the Zindi conflict. And so, you know, this coming off the heels of that type of storytelling, and, you know, we're still much earlier in the Federation and Starfleet in general, I think to be raising these type of questions is definitely a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess probably in the end, I would say it does seem like it would have been, I think that the episode would have been more interesting if in pointing out the hypocrisy that Nera had actually used some of the points that I made, like, hey, look all the way back. You got your buddy with the Nobulans and, you know, they're. And so it seems strange to me that in a big case like this, when she's trying to specifically point out this type of hypocrisy, that she would not have used that. And so it would have made a great point for, I mean, and in that way, it would have been a huge benefit to the episode to reach back and use that.
So, yeah, I'm a bit surprised they did not include mention of the Denobulans because it does tie so directly into the issue of the story. I wonder if it's because maybe when you think about the fandom, you know, Enterprise wasn't the most popular series when it was on TV. Some people are going back now and watching it, but to be honest, it doesn't even matter. But my question is, would it be lost on a large portion of the audience? Denobulans, they did genetic modifications. I didn't know that. And so it doesn't feel like a strength to the case that's being made in the episode. But then again, all the time in Star Trek, you're making up stuff that no one's ever heard of before in support of a plot or a story element or the resolution of a story. And that's fine. So I'm a little surprised they didn't, given the efforts to include a lot of backstory. I'm surprised that they didn't at least have that be a mention, you know, like you're saying here. It would have
because
worked.
It would have been great.
Yeah.
I think.
It would have made the story richer within the Star Trek universe for sure. Your question about how do you punish a kid for something, or how do you punish someone for something that happened to them as a child? I think that in this situation, that's there to highlight the draconian nature of the laws, which again is a line from Nera here in the courtroom scene. She also brings up that slavery was once legal, apartheid was once legal, discrimination against people for how they worshipped, how they loved, their gender, color of their skin, all legal at one time or another. And if you look at today's world, just right now, what's happening, there's this trend of discrimination against transgender people, which is just the latest in this long, long line of deciding that it's okay to discriminate against a certain group of people because, and she says this in here as well, it makes you feel uncomfortable. And I think that's the core of this story. It's not just about Una, not just about Illyrians. It's really about the never-ending cycle in human nature of choosing some group to discriminate against, creating laws to hold back one particular group, And history has shown us that as time goes by, these laws and these ways of thinking about certain groups of people fade away. Sometimes they come back, but then they fade back again. But it's just human nature. And I think that contrasting that with what the Federation and Starfleet claim to be is a very powerful message in the story, because as we said a moment ago, the Federation comes off looking pretty bad here and very intolerant as an organization who claims to be about tolerating any kind of difference. You go back to IDIC. We talk about this on a variety of our shows when it comes to Star Trek and some of the interactions that you see. The Federation is supposed to be about diversity. It's supposed to be about accepting everyone. I think the case is made very strongly by Neera and Una in this episode that that is the image of Starfleet. That's the image of the Federation. And then it's contrasted with this idea that, well, here are our rules. And you mentioned earlier that rules are arbitrary. It's actually not that the rules are arbitrary. It's that the enforcement of the rules are arbitrary. And,
right,
you know, Star Trek would be quite boring if the captains followed the rules all the time. Think about all your favorite episodes, not all of them, but many of your favorite episodes from across all the series, and how many of them hinge on the captain or another member of the crew violating rules, violating regulations, doing what they feel is right to help others, but going against the letter of the law. And in most cases, it's okay. In rare cases, do we see someone actually being punished for violating the rules of Starfleet? So it's great to have these laws on the book. There's good intention in the reason why the Federation has outlawed genetic engineering. They mentioned the eugenics wars. I felt too many times in this episode, actually. You know, as fans, okay, we know the eugenics wars. It was brought up, it was repeated quite a few times, but there's a good reason why those rules are there. But just because the rules are there, it doesn't mean that the rules are right, and it doesn't mean that the rules should not be revisited, and it also doesn't mean there shouldn't be flexibility in those depending on circumstances.
I mean, I think, you know, Dr. Phlox actually makes the best argument for this when he's talking to Song in Borderlands, when he says, we did careful genetic manipulation. We weren't trying to rewrite our genome, basically, and completely augment our species. There's a complete difference in that. And I think there's... I didn't have a problem with them using the eugenics wars, because in some ways you're confronting fear here, the fear that we would go down this road again and we would find ourselves in a place worse off than we were before. Mm-hmm. And so I think the beauty of this is that there actually is a great argument for why these rules exist. These rules actually should exist in the Federation, I mm-hmm. think. Why? Because we've seen the terrible things that can happen. And, you know, we can jump to Deep Space Nine and see how they continue to happen, right? Mm-hmm. When people are continuing to play like this, for every Julian Bashir, there's 100 people that end up just like the ones, mm-hmm. you know, in the his little group. Mm-hmm. And so I think what we see here, and I think the beauty of this is that basically Song and people like him were playing God. Whereas you see people like the Denobulans, and I think even the Illyrians here, they're not using it to play God. They're using it to find a way to survive.
The interesting thing about the Illyrians is that they're doing it also to escape persecution.
Right.
Because they learn to adapt themselves so that they have the ability to live in more places, so they have somewhere to go.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and what's interesting is that there's a whole comic series that happened between the seasons, and they never touch on this, which it's, you know, maybe this will come out sometime later in the series, but that the Illyrians are actually failed Vulcan experiments. Mm-hmm. You know, the Vulcans had come to their planet knowing that they were going to have ecological ruin soon, and tried to help them through genetic engineering. And instead of really helping them, they ended up creating monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Vulcans just basically left.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, before the Vulcans choose to follow Surok's teachings. And so they're kind of going around playing gods on worlds. And there are a certain segment of Illyrians who are able to escape that, their planet. And then they use that genetic engineering to allow themselves to adapt to the planets instead of adapting planets to them.
Right.
So they don't terraform worlds. They terraform themselves, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this is one of the places where I think the episode actually kind of fails, because by not giving us this really full story to help us understand everything about the situation, I think that it could have just been so much stronger if we really, like, this was a two-part episode where we really got to dig into this whole Illyrian enigma. That's what the comic mm-hmm. is called. And it would have been much more interesting, because I think, like you said, what that does is it adds validity to the fact that the Illyrians, like the Denobulans, are using this responsibly and not as a way to, like, basically make themselves gods, you mm-hmm. know, so they can have more power, like a Suong wanted, you know, and or a Khanunian Singh, and all those kind of things. And so, but by not really adding that part to the discussion, I think mm-hmm. we actually made the episode weaker rather than stronger, because that's actually a very important part mm-hmm. to this story. But if you hadn't read the comic and you don't know that, then right. you don't really have a complete understanding as to why the Illyrians do this. I mean, Una says that it's a part of their culture.
Yeah.
But that's not really a full understanding. And of course, she doesn't actually know this, because the Illyrian Council won't let Pike share this information, because it would fundamentally change the way Illyrians would see themselves. So Una mm-hmm. doesn't even know this full history, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's just like, by kind of not giving us the full story, I think we kind of lose something in the telling.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know if it makes the story weaker, because if you don't know any of that, you can only judge the story on what's being presented to you. However, it would have been a much stronger story, absolutely, if that had been included. And it's interesting, because it's so pertinent to the situation, it's interesting that they didn't include any of that background from the comic, because they do make a reference to the Short Trek Q&A when Spock says that he did feel that Una was hiding something, a love for Gilbert and Sullivan. So they are calling back to a very niche little bit of creative that had been produced. And in this case, it would have changed the complexion of the story quite a bit, because when Vice Admiral Pasak stands up and shifts the entire tone, kills the emotion that was building, and says, hey, we've got a case of conspiracy here, to have a Vulcan vice admiral stand up and take that position in the court martial of someone from a race that his own people are responsible for putting in this situation in the first place could have been extremely interesting. And in Star Trek, there are two types of courtroom episodes. There are the ones like this one that just unfold in the courtroom all the way through, and maybe you get a few breaks here and there. I'm thinking of like Dax in the first season of DS9. And then you've got the ones where there's a trial of some kind, but we're also cutting to events of the past, where we're getting information that we need to figure out how we feel about the thing that's being told, but also we need to have some background to the story. Something like Matter of Perspective in The Next Generation, when Riker is on a little right. trial, right? We need to know, well, what really happened. And so in this one, I like the idea that you present of it being a two-parter, because there are two ways you could approach it. The first part could be primarily about that history of the Vulcans with the Illyrians, and then the second part could be more about the trial, or we could intersperse it, as I was describing a moment ago, where we're in the courtroom, but we get these flashbacks and we get the story, and then maybe there's a cliffhanger in the middle where we're not sure where things are going to be headed. But it would just really fill in this background, and I think it would be very interesting for us to have that. First of all, it would enhance the evolution of the Vulcans that we have luckily gotten, starting with Enterprise onwards in Star Trek. And we would learn more about how the Vulcans came to be who they are now. And also, it would do so much to flesh out who the Illyrians are, which I think Strange New Worlds, in its very limited, we've only had 12 episodes of the series so far, I think they've done a pretty good job of actually making the Illyrians something more than just, hey, Una is an Illyrian. I know she looks human, but she's not. She's this other alien. So they've been filling that in, but it would have just made it so much richer. So, like, for me, I thought this was a very strong episode, but the depth to which they could have gone to enrich Star Trek canon, Star Trek history, and the characters, it's actually impressive how much they could have done. Like, what material is there that could have been worked
right
with? And it is unfortunate that they didn't go deeper.
Well, and I think, you know, even her using Ad Astra per Aspera, you know, the idea that we need our struggles, you know, and our experiences to make us who we are, you know, in the end, Nera even talks about the idea that we're all capable of good or ill, and it's our actions that define us, not our genetics. And so I think that's really interesting too, because the reason, of course, that we learn in the comic that the Illyrians are doing this is out of desperation to survive, not because, again, they're trying to become a superhuman race or a super person race, right? They're not trying to be super Illyrians. They're just trying to survive. And I think that makes a huge difference. You know, it's one of the things where we can clearly see that for Denobulans, when they discovered and started using genetic engineering, they were at a point to which they weren't trying to create super Denobulans. And so the struggles and experiences that get us to a place where we can actually use a technology wisely is very important. And I think that this episode touches on that theme. And I kind of wish that it would have really hit it harder, because I think, you know, that's the important thing here. It is a tool, and how it is used is what makes it good or ill, wrong or right, good or evil. And so I think that's the problem, is that, you know, we don't really, I think, get into that too much. But I thought that that was a good part of the episode. And so, but I mean, we're also, I think, dealing with a very important question of the law and the letter of the law and the spirit of the law and which one to follow. When are laws wrong? When are they unjust? You know, all of these kind of things. And the biggest issue here, and I think the one that we obviously don't get a chance to really truly deal with, is this law has a very good reason for existing, and yet the spirit of that law is that we don't go down that path again. But again, the Illyrians themselves aren't human, right? And so we don't really get a chance to kind of truly, I think, dig into these questions, which, you know, it is almost one of the frustrating parts, I think, of these series only, you know, having 10 episodes a
right.
season,
yeah.
is we don't really get to do that. And I think the episode raises really good questions, but it doesn't always have any answers whatsoever. And I think that's kind of the thing where the more I thought about the episode is the more I felt being swept by the emotion. Mm-hmm. And as much as I don't like the character, Haslick has his character and even just my own thought process, it's like, but I have to actually start thinking not just with emotion, but I have to merge that with logic. And that's what gives me wisdom. And so we're in the episode, I feel like dragged more towards emotion than we are logic. And therefore, when I view it just like that, I feel more comfortable with the episode.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I start to think about it, again, very end of the episode, the judge, one of the main judge there, mm-hmm. you know, she talks about how this is a nuanced conversation, mm-hmm. you know, but it feels like there's less nuance in this episode and more just like, we're going to pile on your emotional feelings and then we're going to manipulate you into feeling one way. And mm-hmm. yet there's way more to it than just that one side, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I feel the emotion of Una's story, though.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not trying to take away from that part at all, because I think that is good. And so.
But I think it was very effective in shining a light on, in this case, the Federation, and how hypocritical, whether it's an individual, whether it's an organization, whether it's a nation, or in Star Trek, a world, how hypocritical someone can be, where the Federation, it's actually said in the episode when Nira's talking, and she says, I'm not saying the Federation means to do harm. And she talks about how they built a utopia in the aftermath of the eugenics wars and World War III, and she says, in an effort to protect that utopia, they became blinded by a centuries-old fear, so much so that they have perhaps unknowingly become persecutors. And when I look at the world today, and I'm outside the United States, as everyone knows, when I look back over to the country that I grew up in, I really am sometimes puzzled by the positions that I'm seeing and the views that I'm seeing and all, because I feel like the U.S. has lost sight of the principles on which it was founded, and it grew into a great power and a world leader, and old fears are creeping in and groups are turning against one another, and I don't think it's healthy, and I don't think it's taking us down a positive road. And so at some point, there has to be some bigger way of looking at things, like remember that America was this melting pot. It's a place where people from all around the world wanted to go. And I remember when I was a kid, maybe you remember on TV, there used to be the great melting pot animation song that was on between commercials on Saturday mornings. And it doesn't feel that way these days. And the reason I bring this up isn't, you know, to indict the U.S. or anything at this point, but Star Trek is written by Americans, which is often pointed out by fans around the world, and the Federation is modeled on the United States, but it's modeled on the United States of the past that really was more of this melting pot, come here, it's a wonderful land of diversity, everybody's welcome. And the Federation is supposed to be that in Star Trek, but itself, as any organization, as any group of people or country always does, it loses sight of that. And the Federation here is being put on, Una is being put on trial. It's a court martial of Una. But also, I think Nira effectively puts the Federation itself on the stand here and shines a light on how you can lose direction and how you have to be vigilant and adaptive to survive, not just as an individual, but as an organization. And And that's just where I just feel that the reason that Una wanted to be part of Starfleet in the first place, the reason that she felt she would be safe in Starfleet and she would be safe in the Federation, is the core of what Star Trek has always been presented to us as. And yet, here, the Federation isn't upholding that at all. They're just deciding that this officer, who is highly decorated, has a spotless record. Admiral April thinks she's one of the greatest people to ever come into Starfleet, but she's going to be torn down, thrown out, and put in prison for 20 years if she doesn't agree to be thrown out, simply because when she was a child, something happened, something was done to her that the rule book of the Federation says you can't do.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think all of that's really well said. And the, I think the, again, what it comes down to, and the judge said at the end, it's about nuance, right? And it's about being able, I think, to have conversations. And I think that's the other thing, you know, we're just in a place where everybody's on a side and nobody's willing to have an actual conversation about things and talk things through. And yet, I still really struggle with this story, because by telling it, we're bringing a light to something that's never going to be solved. We're never going to solve this problem in the Federation, because as far as we know, all the way to the 24th century, you know, genetic engineering is still outlawed. And so, I think this is the frustration I have with the episode, Chris, and it really bothers me. Like, you're telling this story, and it's a good emotional story about something I think that's important, and yet by telling it, we already know that nothing's going to change, ever, in Star Trek. So it's frustrating to tell this story and, like, try and point something out like this, but, you know, in the 24th century, we're still talking about how dangerous genetic engineering is. And actually, you know, Deep Space Nine, I think, does a great job of talking about this subject and the fact that, yeah, again, for every one Julian Bashir, there's 100 others that don't turn out like that. And so I think the frustrating part is that I don't feel like this fits very well in the canon that we've been given, because I struggle on both sides. I struggle before and after. That doesn't mean that this itself, by itself, if this was just a one-off of a show, you know, that wasn't connected to anything else, it would be fantastic, right? I really struggle with the way we talk about everything, but there's never going to be a change. And therefore, that makes it really difficult for me, because I think one of the things that's like, well, we talk about all this nuance and everything, but even in a more involved future in the 24th century, nope, we still have the same roles. So,
well, yeah. And I think that speaks to the fact that it's a never ending struggle to overcome prejudice and fear and to treat everyone with equality in a society, because it goes against human nature, unfortunately. As far as the episode goes for me, I think that I take this particular episode, I step out of the Star Trek universe with it. I don't think the episode, I don't think the story is about what is the Federation going to do about its rules regarding genetic engineering. I think that it's about accepting true diversity, accepting people who need protection, caring for them as you say you will, and not persecuting them because they have violated some line in a law book somewhere. That in life, you always do need to look at situations. And, you know, in the legal system now, if someone is tried for a crime, the judge has in most cases, the judge has discretion in sentencing. The length of the sentence may differ. They may not get prison time. They may be put on probation. The judge is looking at the circumstances, and I think that that is what you have to do. And in this episode, it's being presented, especially through the Pasak, that you can't do that. Like, this is the rule. Sorry, but this is the rule. And I feel like the episode is more about, it's just speaking to us about how we should see others in situations and treat others in the real world. And so it doesn't fully jive with all of Star Trek canon. If you try to fit it in universe, it doesn't fully fit. But I think it does what Star Trek does at its best, which is to take an issue, take a social issue, explore it, present different views of it. And often that does mean that it's a very emotional presentation, because that's necessary to get through to humans, since we're not Vulcans. And I think it does that quite well. And for me, I thought it was a powerful episode. And I totally see, yeah, there are rough edges for sure in terms of how it fits into canon in the Star Trek universe. And the fact that the rules against genetic engineering still exist in the late 24th century, I think, is, you would expect, based on this story, that between this time and then, they would have revisited this and kind of figured out a different way of looking at it. Yeah, absolutely. In-universe, right. You would expect that for sure. But when you're writing, and this is the tricky thing about writing prequels, right? When you're writing prequels, you can't go back and change what was written further down the timeline. And
right,
if you try to always make everything fit together, you're often going to tie your hands as a writer. And especially when you're presenting a very important message, which I think that this episode has a very important message and a timeless one, when you're doing that, I think that you shouldn't tie your hands too much if it's going to interfere with being able to actually present to shine the light on the social issue. And then the one thing I thought was especially good about this episode in terms of that is that they trace it all the way back to slavery, which doesn't necessarily only have to mean slavery as Americans view it, because there have been slaves throughout history going far, far further back into other civilizations and cultures. And so, and there are slaves today too in different settings, unfortunately. And so this is another dark side of human nature that we always have to fight against. And so it's able to link to something that goes so far back in our past, but also feel very contemporary, almost to the point of being another one of those ripped from the headlines moments, talking about some of the rules that are being put into place right now this year that discriminate against people. And because it's able to do all of that, I feel like it does what Star Trek does best and is presented very effectively for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a better episode when I look at it outside of canon, and I kind of take, you know, this and Discovery on its own merits, like, you know, just in its own universe, basically. And I think it does do a good job of helping us to have discussions about these questions and the fact that there need to be discussions about all of these questions. And we've said many times, one of the things about joining the Federation is that you're not required to join the Federation. But if you want to, you have to sign up with mm-hmm. the values that they hold, right? The beauty of something like the U.S. system was the fact that it allowed for things to be amended, you know, and for over time, things to change. And our, you know, our best ideas were, you know, that all people are created equal, right? And starting with that. And that's been the thing that has allowed us to be able to move forward and live up to, as Nero would say, our best ideas. And so, you know, I think on that front, you know, this episode is good. And I think, too, you know, now at this point, we've gotten over the hump of the things they left us from for last season. And I'm kind of ready to see what the rest of the season itself has. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah. All right. So the one other thing I meant to mention, should have mentioned it earlier. There are two things, actually, I just want to bring up. You talked about logic, and I think that there's a nice contrast in this episode between Pasak and Spock, and there's another thing connected to that. So what I think's nice in terms of logic is that Pasak stands up, and he's looking at everything with through the eyes of logic, and logically she violated the law, so hey, we got to find her guilty. And he asks Spock about it, and Spock says, well, I think it would be illogical for Starfleet to harm itself. And I like that for a couple of reasons. One is because even within logic, I think what might be considered logical to one person might not be logical to the other person, because Spock has a very strong point that, well, okay, it might be logical to hold her to the letter of the law, but it's illogical for us to harm ourselves by depriving ourselves of someone who is of such value and who has helped so many people.
And I think that's exactly, you know, where I was coming from earlier, where it's like, it's not just emotion, it's not just logic. And Spock says it in Star Trek VI, logic is only the beginning of wisdom. And true wisdom comes from knowing how to meld both of those with our experiences that then help us inform ourselves beyond just one side of the pendulum or the other. You know, and so I think that's where, you know, Spock here is already ahead of the game, and we can see him progressing to the place he will go in the future, because he's already starting to kind of find a middle ground.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it plays well for the character also. And then the other thing connected to this that I really liked was the scene, and I think they did a really good job of setting up the rest of the story with what was another Ortegas fun scene, where she's watching Spock and Pasak, and she makes the assumption that because they're both Vulcans, they're going to think the same. And while she's talking about it, it's like setting up the idea that we need to be more tolerant of diversity, but I'm watching these two people and they're the same. And so she, and then Mabinga interjects and says, well, you know, don't you notice the body language? Can't you see this? And he's coming at it from a more nuanced and informed position from experience. And he's a bit more open-minded about it. And I thought that mirrored what we often see in society today as well, where someone says, they say diversity is super important, but then they'll look at another group of people and make assumptions about those people that they're all the same, which goes against the very thing that they're saying that they support in the first place. And I thought that this episode spoke to that very effectively in a very short scene that doesn't hit you over the head with any message like that. But if you just watch what's going on, it's like a light bulb goes off, like, ah, yeah. Yeah, I shouldn't just look at these two people and assume they're the same. That's, you know, I'm putting my own prejudices onto those people.
Yeah, I mean, you can never assume. You know, I mean, the only way to know someone is to actually get to know them. That, and by watching what they do, not what they say, right? Those two things,
yeah,
you know, are the things that are going to let you know somebody. And so, but just assuming you know who they are because of where they were born or any of those type of things, right, is, you know, ridiculous. You just can't do that. And so, you know, I think that was a great little moment because it subtly is reminding us of the ways in which we can all do that to one another and see that in our own lives. And I think that's a great point to be reminded of, is that we have to be constantly vigilant about that in ourselves. And I don't think there's any person on the planet who isn't guilty of that.
So I just wanted to bring that up because I thought that was a case of the episode very effectively presenting commentary on this issue in society in both a serious way in the courtroom and in a lighthearted way with that scene and then Spock's reaction when he comes over as well. I'm sorry you had to witness this. So I thought the writing was good in this episode in that sense as well. Well, I think we've laid out our final thoughts pretty thoroughly on this, Matthew. So what's your rating for this one?
Yeah, I think I'm going to give this one a 3.5 out of 5. You know, I think there's some real good here. I think, and a lot of the things that we talked about, I really think that you could have found a way to ameliorate a lot of my frustrations with the episode quite easily, actually, in the writing. And so I wish that that had been the case. I still think it's a good episode. It's not my favorite of the series, but one of the things that's nice about it is, you know, it's really well acted. You know, I think Rebecca Romijn gives a great performance. Our main guest cast is fantastic. I think all of them do a phenomenal job. And so that is always wonderful in a show like this. So where are you going to land, Chris?
Yeah, I'm going to give this one 8 Latin dictionaries. I think the episode's really strong. I would even lean towards 9 in terms of its messaging, and that's out of 10. I do wish that they had enriched it a little bit more. So I'm going to knock off a little bit on my rating because I think that there are quite a few things, as we discussed, that could have been part of the episode, even without going full-on two-parter like we talked about. But just adding a little bit more background to the connections between Vulcans and Illyrians and Federation world involvement in their history that would have strengthened the message, even as you take it out of the Star Trek universe. But I thought it was a great episode. I think that it will be remembered in the long term as one of the upper echelon Star Trek episodes because the message is so on point to Roddenberry's original vision and purpose for Star Trek. So I really enjoyed it. Well, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Ad Astra per Aspera. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. If you're a member, you know how it works. If not, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come right up. If not, type the whole name, the Babel Conference. It is a closed group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcast. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll see a post on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with fellow listeners and Matthew and me right there. And we had some great chats after last week's episode, and I hope we'll have some again this time. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts there. If you'd like to send us email, you can go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Saddle Up, and your message will mosey its way right on over to Matthew and me. And of course, you can find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. Now, Matthew, when you're not getting fitted for a new custom oxygen mask for your next visit to an Illyrian world, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, when that's not happening, of course, you could find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. I'm most active on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero under that name. You can also, of course, find me here on the network with the 602 Club as we talk about all the fandoms outside of Star Trek we love. So we hope you'll join us there, doing literary treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Chris, you and I do The Orb, where we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and we're going through our 30th anniversary rewatch. Warp 5, where we're doing our 20th anniversary rewatch of Star Trek Enterprise, and The Artificial Tango about Star Trek Picard. And don't worry, We have some things coming there as well soon, so I hope everybody will check those out. You'll find me over on the Nerd Party Network as well. I've got a completed show called Owl Posts about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series and Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars. But Chris, when you're not trying to figure out just how big your brooch can be before your uniform's going to be lopsided, where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm working on that. I got one of these kits from Walmart. You probably remember that they're shrinky dinks. And I mean, the box, because it shrinks, the box is huge, but I just love coloring those things in and baking them before the next trial. But when I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network. As you mentioned, doing all of those shows with you, Larry Nemechek, and I do the Ready Room from time to time. And you can find me in many episodes in the back catalog across a range of shows. So tune in. We've got thousands and thousands and thousands of hours, literally, of Star Trek discussion for you to listen to here on the network. And I'd also love to chat with you. You can find me in social media under the username C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. That's my username everywhere. Twitter's where I'm most active, but you can find me on Mastodon, on the Trekkies.social instance, and all around. And I'd love to hear from you in social media. And if you'd like to help us keep all of our discussions on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So thank you to everyone who is keeping us going right now. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to next week's journey on Saddle Up. I think we might have a fun episode in store for us.
Well, Chris, that sounds great. So hit it.